This podcast is sponsored by the book, The Concept, A Critical and Honest Look at God and Religion, by Bo Bennett, PhD. Challenge your beliefs and explore faith through science and reason. Discover more at godtheconcept.com.
Okay, so today we're diving into, well, some fascinating stuff, I think. We've got these excerpts, right, from this secular analysis of the Gospel of Luke. And what we're going to do is look at it from, you know, a scholarly perspective.
Yeah.
Kind of dig into, like, the historical context, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the, well, inconsistencies, frankly.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, see if we can figure out, like, how it all kind of speaks to us today.
I mean, it's definitely a text that, like, has a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot to unpack. Okay. So first off, like, who wrote this thing? And like, when, I mean, it's not exactly like clear cut, is it?
No, not really. When it comes to like figuring out who actually wrote the Gospel of Luke, I mean, it's kind of like a puzzle, you know. The traditional view like attributes it to Luke, you know, a physician, a companion of Paul.
Right.
But the thing is that the text itself, it doesn't actually say that, you know.
Right.
We don't have like any clear-cut, like, external evidence to definitively say, like, yes, this was written by Luke. And as far as when it was written, most scholars agree that it was probably sometime between 80 and 90 AD.
Okay.
But, like, the exact year, the exact author, I mean, that's where the debate gets really, really heated, you know?
It's like, yeah, what makes it so hard to pin it down? Like, what are the biggest, like, roadblocks that scholars kind of run into when they're trying to figure this stuff out?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, first of all, you got to remember that, like, ancient texts, they didn't exactly come with, like, you know, author bios like we have nowadays.
Right.
It was really common for texts to just kind of be circulated anonymously.
Right.
And authorship was often based on, like, tradition or later attribution, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's also this, like, question of methodology, you know, like, how scholars are actually approaching the text. So some scholars, they might focus on, like, linguistic analysis, looking for stylistic similarities to other writings that are attributed to Luke, you know. Other scholars, they might prioritize the historical context, you know, analyzing how the gospel's themes and the events that it describes, how those fit or don't fit
right
with what we know about, like, the historical period.
Yeah, yeah.
And so each of these methods, they have their own strengths and limitations, you know?
Right.
And so that makes it really tricky to come to, like, a definitive conclusion.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got this mystery surrounding, like, who wrote it, and then, like, as we're digging deeper into the text, you know, we start to, like, we stumble upon these inconsistencies, right?
Yeah.
Especially when we compare it to, like, the other gospels, like, for example, the lineage of Jesus,
right,
that's presented in Luke. It's like it doesn't quite match up with the one in Matthew.
Right.
So what do we do with these? I mean, what are we to make of these discrepancies?
You've hit on, like, a really crucial point, I think, because these inconsistencies, they're not just, like, minor trivia. You know, they raise some really big questions about the historical accuracy of the text, you know,
yeah,
and the different perspectives that are being woven into these narratives, you know. So, I mean, some scholars argue that these differences reflect, like, evolving oral traditions.
Oh, yeah.
So each gospel writer might have been drawing on, like, a slightly different set of stories and teachings, right?
Okay, interesting.
Others suggest that, well, maybe the authors had these, like, specific theological agendas.
Okay.
They might have shaped their accounts to emphasize certain aspects of Jesus's life and ministry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So it's really fascinating.
It's like, yeah, it's almost like trying to put together this puzzle.
Right.
Where some of the pieces, like, belong to a different puzzle, it seems like, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so speaking of things that, like, don't quite fit neatly.
Right.
We can't really overlook the miracles that are sprinkled throughout the Gospel of Luke. We're talking about the virgin birth.
Yeah.
And Jesus walking on water and the resurrection, right?
Yeah.
I mean, events that, you know, they kind of clash with our modern scientific understanding of the world.
Oh, for sure.
So how do we reconcile that?
Well, I think the presence of miracles in these texts, like, it kind of invites us to consider how ancient cultures might have viewed the world differently, you know, from the way we do today. I mean, they didn't necessarily have this, like, rigid separation between the natural and the supernatural, you know?
Right.
And so for them, these miraculous events might have served as, like, these really powerful symbols, you know?
Okay.
Reinforcing their belief in Jesus's divine authority.
Right.
And his connection to, like, a higher power.
So instead of viewing them as, like, literal historical events.
Right.
We might want to consider, like, There's symbolic and theological significance, right?
Exactly.
Okay. But it's not just the miracles, right, that might raise eyebrows today.
Yeah.
Some of the moral standards that are presented in Luke, they feel, well, kind of out of step.
Yeah.
With modern sensibilities, I think. I mean, take, for instance, like the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, right? Where the rich man ignores this beggar at his gate, right, and ends up suffering in the afterlife, whereas the beggar finds solace.
Right.
It seems like such a simplified, almost like transactional view of morality, you know?
Yeah, that's a really great observation. And I think this parable really reflects like the social and religious values of the time, you know?
Yeah.
Where wealth was often seen as like a sign of God's favor, you know?
Yeah.
And poverty was seen as a sign of divine disfavor.
Wow.
So it's like, it's really a stark reminder that like the moral landscape can shift so dramatically over time. And what might have been like a really straightforward lesson in one era might be interpreted in like so many different ways today.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's also interesting to me how Luke seems to be like particularly focused on these themes of wealth and poverty, right?
I mean,
we see this in the story of the rich young ruler, right?
Right.
Who's told to sell all of his possessions and follow Jesus.
Right.
And he just walks away saddened because of his great wealth.
Right.
So, I mean, how do those teachings about like wealth and possessions, I mean, how do they resonate in our modern world with all its like complex economic systems and social structures? I mean, it's just a very different...
That's such a good question. And I think it's tempting to just kind of dismiss these teachings as like impractical or idealistic in today's world, you know?
Right.
But maybe they're actually offering us like a challenge, you know, like a call to examine our own attachments to material wealth and to really think about how those attachments might be hindering us, you know, preventing us from like growing spiritually or preventing us from like really being compassionate and generous.
Yeah. So maybe it's not so much about literally selling all of our possessions.
Right.
But more about like recognizing where we place our ultimate value.
Yeah.
Right. And making sure that our priorities like are aligned with, you know, our deepest principles.
Exactly. It's like it's about cultivating that inner detachment from material things, recognizing that like true wealth lies in our relationships, you know, and in our values and in the things that we contribute to the world.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, so as we're kind of wrapping up our exploration of the Gospel of Luke, I think it's clear that this is not just some ancient text, you know, gathering dust on a shelf. I mean, this is a living document that continues to spark debate and raise all these like thought-provoking questions.
Yeah, for sure.
So what do you think, like, what's the most important takeaway for our listeners as they approach this, or frankly, any other ancient text?
Well, I think the key is to approach these texts with, like, a critical but open mind, you know, to recognize that they were written in these specific historical contexts, you know, and that there were particular worldviews and agendas at play, you know, that were shaping the narrative.
Right.
And to embrace, you know, embrace the inconsistencies, embrace the questions, embrace the challenges, because that's where the real learning happens.
We can appreciate the beauty and the wisdom of these texts without like taking everything literally. Or ignoring the complexities.
Exactly.
And this also ties into like this broader skill of critical thinking.
Right.
Which is just, I mean, so essential in the world we live in today.
Yeah, for sure.
Learning to question assumptions.
Right.
And analyze evidence.
Yeah.
Consider multiple perspectives.
Yeah.
I mean, these are just invaluable tools, whether you're like exploring ancient texts or like trying to make sense of the latest news headline.
It all applies, you know.
It all applies. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So to our listener, we'll leave you with this. How can exploring a text like the Gospel of Luke, like from multiple perspectives, how does that enrich our understanding, not just of the past, but of ourselves and the world that we live in today, right? I mean, keep those questions coming.
Yep.
And happy exploring.
Keep diving in.
Yeah, keep diving in. Exactly. Yeah.